Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm happy to be joined on the podcast today by writer Amy Wineland Daughters, author of the new nonfiction book, Dear Dana, That Time I Went Crazy and Wrote All 580 of My Facebook Friends a Handwritten Letter. Brad Aronson, bestselling author of Humankind, Changing the World, One Small Act at a Time, wrote about the book. Amy shows us how something as simple as a letter, let alone 580 of them, can change a life. Who else would decide to write a personal letter to every one of their Facebook friends? The stories from these letters provide insights into how we can help people through difficult times and connect with others. And of course, plenty of good laughs. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, the subtitle of your book kind of tells what the book is about, but can you tell us, this idea had to start somewhere. What made you decide to write a handwritten letter to every one of your 580 Facebook friends?
Well, Jeff, I like to tell the story by saying I was minding my own business. And I got on Facebook just like we all do. And a friend from a summer camp from 1986 popped in my head. Her name was Dana. We had spent 6 weeks probably together at the summer camp in Texas. She had a huge personality. So did I. We both thought we were hilarious. So I was like, oh, I wonder what happened with Dana. I type her name in. I find her. I friend her. She accepts, even though we've had zero communication in 30 years. You know, I look at her life from the outside in. She's got 5 kids, 4 daughters, 1 son. The youngest kid is the son. His name is Parker. And I find out right away he's battling cancer at St. Jude in Memphis. You know, so as a human being, I get involved in the story. Parker goes through treatment. He ends up going home, going into remission, getting treatment locally. And then at the end of that same year, Parker goes back to St. Jude. The cancer comes back. And then suddenly, an inspiration, like a bolt of lightning hit me. And I was like, you know what? When they went back to Memphis, and I'm following along the story on Facebook, still had no contact with any of these people. I was like, you know what I'm going to start doing? I'm going to start writing Dana and Parker letters at the Ronald McDonald House in Memphis. And I like to tell the story like in levels of total craziness and insanity. So this is like level one, like the entry level craziness. Like they don't know who I am. Like that was 30 years ago. I've never met Parker. He's struggling with cancer. I haven't written anyone a letter in 30 years. It's not like I was on some letter writing, you know, quest, because I wrote letters like a lot of us did when I was younger,
sure,
but I hadn't since then. So I start writing these people letters in Memphis, Tennessee, like, you know, I'm praying for you. I'm thinking about you. You're battling cancer. Okay. That's nuts. So that lasts for about, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks. And then I can see the shift of, you know, the tone of Dana's Facebook posts start to shift. I'm like, oh my God, you know, it's bad. You can tell it's bad. And then, you know, and there's no good words for this, Brad. Like, unfortunately, you know, Parker passes away at 15. And you know, there's no way to frame that. It had nothing to do with me.
Sure.
But still, I was devastated as a fellow mom. I sat back and I was like, you know, what do I do next? And then it was just like another inspiration of craziness. I was like, I'm just going to keep writing her. So now I had to stalk her address in Louisiana where she was from, because I wasn't really sure where she was from because it was Facebook. And so I find her husband's law office address and I just keep writing her every week, like totally crazily. Her son has passed away. I have nothing to do with these people. I keep writing her. Well, then eventually she sends me her home address and she starts writing me back. She starts writing about her grief. I start writing about my life. And we spent 2 years exclusively communicating through the U.S. mail. We didn't text, we didn't have any emails. And it was kind of a profound connection because it was completely non-intentional. We had no idea like what each other's politics were or religious beliefs or anything, except for we were just sharing back and forth in these letters. And we started to trust each other. It made zero sense. None of it made any sense at all. And there was no pressure to reply because I didn't know if she was really reading the letters. I don't think she really knew if I was reading her letters. And after about 6 months of this, I sat back and I was like, you know what? If this one random girl can literally just blow up my life, what else is out there? so then I took it to a whole nother level. I was like, I'm going to write all these people. And I really didn't intend to finish or to do anything meaningful, mm-hmm. but I spent 18 months and I wrote 600 letters to 600 real human beings. And at the same time that I'm writing Dana, and it blew up my life because I realized that if I reach out to you with nothing but goodwill on the line, and then you reply to me in kind, or even if you don't reply to me, then all of a sudden, like all that stuff that separates us, like politics and religion and all these divides that we've set up between each other, like who even cares about all that?
How many of those 580 people wrote you back?
The response rate was about 75%. I'm kind of a numbers girl, so that's a pretty accurate number. And, you know, and that includes people who, by and large, it was handwritten letters I was replied to with. And, you know, but there was phone calls,
sure.
emails, texts, Facebook messages, in person, you know, but over and over again, you know, because one of the things about writing the letters, like, what do you even say? Like, what would you say? And it's so easy to put yourself in the position of the story, you know, like, so you're going to write this girl from seventh grade, junior high school. What are you even going to say? You know, well, what I had to do to find out what, you know, to figure out what to say is I had to go look at their profile. And that sounds simple too, except for I had to find something to write about. So over and over again, I was looking at these people's profiles. I was like, oh my gosh, wait a second. You know, Jeff Rutherford went on, he's got his own podcast. You know, he went to the, and I didn't stalk you, but I read your bio. You went to the University of Georgia. You worked in publishing. You moved to New York City. You did all these amazing things.
You got it right.
I didn't know that because Facebook didn't tell me that. You know, I just saw that you like took your dog out last week and that looked really cool. You know, and I don't even know if you have a dog. So excuse me if you don't, you're not
That's
an
okay.
animal. But then I was like, and you remember that time we stood by the payphone in seventh grade and you helped me because my grandmother died. So I ended up thanking people for stuff they did, like congratulating people for things they'd accomplished that I knew nothing about. And I ended up, you know, apologizing for stuff. You know, and let's say your sister was battling cancer. Well, I would have said, you know, I'm thinking about you. I'm praying for you. That's rough. And so I said all these things that I really had stuff I needed to say, and I had no idea that I need to say it. So, you know, the book takes those two stories, the two narratives, me and Dana and me and the Facebook letters, and it intertwines those two stories. And it ends up being this kind of inspirational, hopeful, you know, the goodness that's still in human relationship story.
Sure. Sure. And I'm curious, I mean, out of those 580, you said you're a numbers person, 75% response rate. How many of those are you still writing?
I have a couple people that I still have a semi-active in writing relationship where maybe five, mm-hmm. you know, but I still write, Dana and I still write each other. She writes me probably twice a month. I still write her almost every Sunday. But more than establishing a in writing relationship with someone, though I can't keep up with all these people, I am in touch in a much different way because of the letters.
Right.
You know, because we've connected. And I swear to you, Jeff, it seems like if I see these people in the flesh, like the hug feels different. Like maybe someone will call me. If someone's in town, they'll contact me and tell me they're in town and maybe we'll go to lunch. You know, people message me with their business. I feel, because I always thought through the whole project, you know, everybody always says they're going to get off social media. I was like, when this is over, I'm getting off. And now there's no. I probably have a handful of people, maybe four or five that we write back and forth occasionally. But what I've really noticed is a real depth to all those relationships. I, like everyone else, had said I was going to get off social media. Now I can't because, you know, I think when I see these people, you know, I feel like the hug is different, you know, and people contact me and tell me stuff that's going on in their lives. And I feel compelled to do the same because it's each of these relationships was depthened to a different degree by these letters.
What were people's general reactions to receiving one of your letters?
Well, that's the thing that kind of shocked me. And maybe this sounds kind of oversimplified, but I had no clue what a letter in 2019 was going to mean to somebody. I didn't understand that the reaction was so strong, you know, borderline emotional with a lot of people because they were so touched. And I told everyone in every letter, look, guys, I'm writing all 580 of my Facebook friends a letter, every single one of them. And over again, people were like, oh, my God, you chose me. And I was like, no, I chose everyone. Like, I literally chose every one of you. And but they were so touched. And I think what happens is, you know, and there's so much good about instant communication. Like, it allows so many relationships to stay.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Way realer than they would had we not had that. And I think social media is not a horrible thing. I think it's a great jump-off point for real relationships, you know. But what happens is, if let's say you sent me a letter, Jeff, you know, like I went out to my mailbox and got it. When I hold that in my hand, especially right now when we're not receiving things like that, mm-hmm. I'm going to immediately connect the dots of what you had to do, like the amount of effort that you put in, you just invested into me. Because you would have had to find an envelope. You would have had to find a pen. You would have had to sit down and physically write something down, whether it was 2 lines or 400. Then you would have had to like seal that thing up. Then where's your stamps, Jeff? You probably don't even have any. Then you had to seal it up, get in your car, and mail it. And then you created this moment at the mailbox, really regardless of what you said. And if you said something meaningful, even better, where I'm like, oh my gosh, I matter to Jeff Rutherford. And I think that experience happened over and over and over again for people. And I didn't understand what it was going to mean, because it absolutely blew people's hearts up, because it's so intentional. And then on top of that, it's non-intrusive. So if you send me a letter, I don't feel compelled to respond to you immediately. It's just like a gift I got that I don't feel like you're not really asking for anything from me. Sure. And I think those two things combined, it really, really meant something to someone. The number one response I got from the letters is, I'm going to save your letter in a special place for the rest of my life.
And I'm curious, did you ever reach a friend in your friend list where you were like, I have no idea what to write to this person?
I think that at the beginning, before I got traction under the hole, I was like, what am I going to say? But the Facebook profiles, I think if I was doing blindly, let's just say I was pulling the names out with zero like background information, I had nothing to rely on, I think that would have happened more. I did, before I really like got into a rhythm, I was like, so what am I going to say? But by about, once I got past about 100 letters, I think I could have written anyone, because I kind of knew what to do then. But, you know, I think it was more, the letters I found more difficult were, let's say, like, I had fired you from a job we used to work at. Like, what am I going to say to you? Like, that's awkward. Because I was, you know, being a person, I think any of us would always feel bad about firing, no matter how we justified it in our head. I think I found those things difficult. And then let's say, because we all have Facebook friends that we don't know, like we don't physically know in the person, like we're trying to figure out how we got connected. These letters were a little awkward.
And that's interesting, kind of tracing how you did connect with them.
Right.
Well, right. I'm curious. I mean, you kind of alluded to it earlier, and you know, I'm not one who thinks that all social media is bad. I think that, you know, in many instances, you know, there are groups that form around specific interests, whether it be gardening or local hiking or whatever, that I think social media is perfect for being able to find your niche. But also, I don't think it's, you know, I obviously think that, you know, there is an element of social media where, unfortunately, I think, you know, in my personal opinion, I think it's, you know, aiding in our division politically. And I'm curious if there were people in your Facebook friends that you knew you disagree with politically or religiously, and you know, how you kind of bridge that gap. And I guess the reason I ask that is because, you know, I feel like in our kind of times that we're living in, there's lots of people who are allowing those divisions to drive them apart rather than, you know, I think in previous years, people would, you know, socialize across those political divisions.
Right. And that is such an excellent question because, I mean, really that lends to what the biggest takeaway for me in this project actually was, because there was so many people, because it's important that I wrote a lot of the Facebook letters during the 2016 presidential election and in the aftermath of that. And it seemed like to me, I don't know your thoughts, but that's when a lot of those lines were being drawn between us. That's when things really got divisive on social media, at least that's when there were so many people that I knew 100% that I wrote letters, not so many, but a bunch that I knew believed exactly the opposite of what I believed. We're going to vote unlike I voted. And it came back to, I can think of a girl in high school who I wrote to, and I knew, and she was really adamantly on, let's say there was, we're going to call it an abyss between us, or like a gap or whatever we're going to call it. So she was on one side, I was on the other, you know? And I in the letter, I ended up saying, you know, I really, and I felt this way. I was like, I'm really, you know, we grew up in this tight suburban box. You know, I really am impressed with how you're not afraid to express your, you know, opinions and how you, you know, and she was somebody who tried to see the other side of stuff. And I said in my letter, I'm glad we're different because I think that's how we learn from one another, you know, and I think that's how change really happens. And I 100% did not expect to hear back from her. And she wrote me back and said, you know, I'm filled with so much hope when I hear from people like you. And she knew I was on the other side of the whole thing. And she was like, stay in touch. And I have stayed in touch with this person. I still think, you know, we agree to disagree on a lot of stuff.
Sure.
But, you know, but that act of me writing her and her writing me back, pretty much, we still believed what we believed. It still mattered to us. But if she walked in her door right now, I would give her a hug. And I think I would tear up because I realized that connecting point that we went to high school together is it doesn't change that we believe different stuff, but it doesn't mean we can't connect with each other and care about each other. And I think what it did was, rather than change, oh, like we all believe the same thing now, it took the focus off of that and put it back on the fact that we're two human beings just struggling through life who have a common connection, and we can absolutely care about each other and learn from each other despite our differences. And, you know, the next presidential election cycle, we were actually sending each other pictures of different political things going on in our area and commenting on them, even mm-hmm. though we disagreed. What a beautiful story.
On that note, how do you think this letter writing experience changed you?
Oh, and that's hard because I absolutely feel like I'm the person who was most changed, because I think it's generally accepted that if we reach out to someone and say, hey, look, I care about you, you're valued, you're loved, you're appreciated, you're cared for, that we're making the other person feel good. And I can tell you from hundreds of experiences that the person who feels the best about the letter writing is me, because I think, you know, it put my life in perspective, you know, relationally for sure, because I was like, oh my gosh, I was so much more grateful, because I was like, oh my gosh, look at all these people who actually fit into my life for a reason. So what started out with this random list of people, well, all of a sudden was this treasure trove of actual relationships. So I was super grateful for writing the letters. And then again, over and over again, I was just filled with hope because I stopped it somehow allowed me to stop looking at people and saying, oh, here's how Jeff and I are different. And I started looking, and I would look at you instead and say, hey, look, Jeff and I shared this time together. He's living this life. He's shared stuff with me. I've shared back with him. And it was just like, boom, boom, boom. My heart just exploded. And I was so full of hope that I think it was absolutely the best version of me, that 18 months that I wrote the letters. And the carryover is I still feel that when I get on Facebook. I'm like, hey, that's my person. What a gift to be able to look at people that way.
That's great.
And totally non-intentionally on my part.
What books, fiction or nonfiction, have you read recently that you enjoyed?
You know, I'm kind of a nonfiction reader, and I'm really a big history lover. But and so that together, like I read the Stephen King, the 1963 book about the JFK assassination, where he goes back in time, and I like time travel. And I loved that book so much. And I wouldn't have thought myself that I've gone and read a couple more Stephen King books that I loved, loved, loved that book, even though it was so long. It was so good. And I would have never seen myself as a, you know, a Stephen King person, but I did. And I think, you know, becoming someone who got the gift of writing this story and being able to share it with the world, I've met so many people and I've read so diversely since writing this book. I've read everything from Ellen Hildebrand to David McCullough to just based on people's recommendations.
Where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about your book or send you an email?
AmyDaughters.com is my website. And I absolutely love to hear from people about letter writing, you know, books. I have another book too. So feel free to, you know, get on my website, learn more about me, and I'd love to hear from people.
That's wonderful. Again, we've been speaking to Amy Wineland Daughters, author of the nonfiction book, Dear Dana, That Time I Went Crazy and Wrote All 580 of My Facebook Friends a Handwritten Letter. The book is available now, so go buy a copy. And Amy, thanks for doing this interview.
Well, thanks so much, Jeff. I enjoyed chatting with you.
Absolutely.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.